KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Shogun co-creator Justin Marks says he and his wife, Rachel Kondo, poured blood, sweat, and tears into their massively expensive and heavily subtitled FX Limited series. But
none of that hardship compares to the hardship of actually saying yes to something like this. I don't know how they have slept at night for the last few years, just knowing the risk, the expenditure, and the potential downside exposure to something that is as ambitious as this.
Marks and Kondo talk about taking on a new and very different Shogun more than 40 years after the miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain and Toshiro Mifune. And they lay out the elaborate five-step process of translating their English words into Japanese dialogue. But first we banter. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my associate in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So I'm just going to quickly mention the Disney proxy fight. That vote comes up next week, and it is a furious battle. A couple of major corporate governance shareholder advisory firms have actually said Nelson Peltz, the Raiders, should get a seat. Nelson Peltz, meanwhile, was giving an interview to the Financial Times saying things like, why do they have to make a movie with all black people? And honestly, I don't know what some of these people are thinking, but okay. And, Iger is striking back with Michael Eisner, who himself was, in a very unusual move, deposed as chairman because of a shareholder revolt. So that's where that's at. We'll see what happens. But I'm going to pivot to the bigger story, I think, for this week, which is the complete bizarre chaos at NBC News, including MSNBC, where apparently the powers that be have decided that bringing in Ronna McDaniel, you know, who is an election-denying, coup-promoting Trump toady, that she could be a good commentator, and they announced that she was going to be on their air, and suffice it to say, it did not go over well with the talent.
No, that was a brisk uprising, I would call it, because starting with Chuck Todd on Sunday and then going all the way through Maddow and basically every single one of the MSNBC hosts, it was pretty clear that this decision was not going to fly. They very quickly reneged on that $300,000 a year contract. It was 2 years. She'll probably get paid out. She made one appearance, which means she'll probably get paid $600,000 for one appearance on TV.
Well, and that was scheduled before they hired her. So.
Right. But let's get to the bigger question here is, A, how does this happen? And this happens because all of these networks and the people who run them are looking at the numbers, and the numbers show that faith in the media amongst conservative voters is at an all-time low. They don't trust the news channels other than Fox.
Yeah, how did that happen?
Right. So what does that mean? That means they're trying to bring in voices that speak to that audience. And we saw it at CNN where they got rid of some people like Don Lemon and tried to bring in more conservative voices. But the fatal fundamental mistake here is that there is a difference between conservative voices and someone who actively participated in trying to overturn the election.
Which is clear to us, right? But not clear to a single leader, executive within the NBC News world. And Rashida Jones, who runs MSNBC, to me is like the most shocking because she courted Ron McDaniel, and Ronna McDaniel was going to get extra money for being on MSNBC's air. Apparently, she was scared that the host might be mean to her, which is not a terrible bet, but snarky at least. So then she turns around like immediately after this blows up, and it was very clear the MSNBC hosts were going to do a tag team, and every single one of them was going to denounce this, especially Maddow, Rachel Maddow. And Rashida Jones turns around and says, oh, well, she's not going to be on our air hosts. Don't worry about her. She's not coming here. Like, if you're the talent on MSNBC, how do you feel about that? When your boss sort of jumped, did they know that she was courting McDaniel? I mean, this is a story the Washington Post had after the fact, but did they know that in real time?
Well, there were a lot of people courting her, and it goes all the way up to Cesar Conde, who runs the news group and other aspects of NBC Universal. And I'm betting it goes all the way up to Brian Roberts, the CEO, because what does Brian Roberts want? He wants more viewers on these news platforms. You know, I don't know if it came down to him saying hire this particular person, but the mandate within NBC News is pretty clear because all of the leaders were saying it. They were all congratulating her on coming aboard. They were all saying this is a good thing for the news network. So that doesn't just happen.
Yeah, let me just say, I mean, this is the product in part of a very disorganized news division headed by Cesar Conde, who is a suit. You know, he is not a news guy, as one of my sources said. And, you know, Noah Oppenheim left as president of NBC News about a year ago. Not like he didn't have his own controversies. I mean, you'll remember the Harvey Weinstein drama. You remember how they sat on the Access Hollywood tape. But they didn't make a new president. They made these different fiefdoms headed by all kinds of different leaders. So they have this divided kind of leadership. And then going up a rung, you have Mike Cavanaugh, who's really president of Comcast, the parent. He's kind of learning a little bit about movies and TV and now news because he is seen as Brian Roberts' heir and successor, but he is only acting on an interim basis, and he will tell you that he has a lot to learn. So I was told by NBC people that, oh no, it didn't go beyond Cesar Conde. I, like you, don't really believe that, but you know, but that's their story and they're sticking to it.
Well, maybe not specifically, but clearly they want conservative voices on the news networks because that has been the message communicated, not just at NBC, but at all of these news networks because they're grappling with unprecedented distrust by conservative voters. It makes perfect sense. It's just the execution was what's flawed here.
I don't know how this plays out, but I do believe heads will be rolling, so we'll see. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, founding partner of Puck News. Tackling James Clavell's hefty 1975 historical novel Shogun is a daunting proposition. But writers Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo aren't the first to try it. Aside from the 1980 miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain and Toshiro Mifune, Shogun also inspired a Broadway musical. Marks and Kondo have taken a fresh approach. Instead of telling a story from the white English-speaking character's perspective, the FX Limited series leans into the complexities of 17th century Japan and the violent battles of feuding warlords. Early in the saga, shipwrecked Englishman John Blackthorne draws a map in the sand, explaining to one of those warlords how he ended up in Japan. The mysterious Tota Mariko, a highborn woman who is unexpectedly educated, is ordered to translate the sailor's story.
We came by way of Magellan's Pass. We are the first outsiders to use it because the Spanish and the Portuguese kept it secret. And for us, it was safer to sail this way because we had to avoid Portuguese base in Macau.
Macau ni Portugal no toride ga aru yue to moshitorimasuru.
When you came in, this had been around, right? It was like one of those ideas that's around, but nobody has finally pulled the trigger to make it. Give me the time frame. I mean, when did you actually start on this?
Well, we like to say that we started when we were in our 30s and we were quite young and vibrant. But we started this process in late 2018.
That's a while ago. Justin, it's kind of funny. I was looking into where you've been and what you've done, and you wrote a piece for The Hollywood Reporter, where I am editor at large.
Yeah.
My life as a screenwriter you've never heard of. And you wrote, during the past decade, I've been paid to write just shy of 24 screenplays. Some scripts get made, but most don't. My name has only remained on one. But that same year, you actually seem to have had this breakthrough moment.
What you'll have to remind me what year that was.
It was 2013, and you were involved with the Jungle Book.
Yeah, I was. Later that year, I was fortunate to start writing that, and got to work with Jon Favreau on that for a number of years. And yeah, it was I learned a lot on that one.
I heard they got it made.
Yeah.
So it just seems like, I don't know, that did it then continue to be the same kind of grind you described before? Or did you, because it's a bit of a time between that and when you guys start on Shogun.
It was. I think in that year I was doing Jungle Book. I also created a show for Stars called Counterpart, which ran for 2 seasons. And that got me into television, which I think we're in the age for feature writers. It's no secret that you know, you get a fair measure more control in television. And, you know, really enjoyed the process, of working with writers in a writer's room and just being kind of responsible for the vision through post-production. It's just a, you know, I always say it's like, if you want us to be accountable for our work, then we have to be responsible for it too. And you can't really be that in features. In television, on the other hand, it's a lot different.
You're much more in charge. You're in charge, period.
Yeah.
And I saw that you worked on Top Gun Maverick, I think, before this, and you called it a dream project, and then, like, this long list of names rewrote, and including Christopher McQuarrie, and I think we're at a point now where if Tom Cruise is in it, it's probably going to have Christopher McQuarrie on it, right, there.
Yeah. We had a fun time on the award circuit for that movie last year, and all of us, you know, coming together, all the writers on that, it was, you know, it was a real relay race, and it was really nice that I think Peter Craig preceded me, and that from him on to the end, it was just a nice straight line of everyone getting credit, and we were really happy with the work. But man, you know, that thing was written by me at least 12 years ago,
wow,
somewhere in that ballpark. So yeah, it's everything takes time these days.
Yes, it could be the second column that you write. I had a giant hit that I worked on 12 years ago. Not a completely unknown Hollywood story. I mean, that happens. And Rachel, meanwhile, where does the idea of Shogun come to you guys? Is it come to Justin first or both together?
Well, I had just finished graduate school at the Michener Center for Writers and came back to Los Angeles from Austin, Texas, and basically was languishing in my house, wondering what had happened to me. And Justin had just started his overall deal with FX. And I remember many years ago him plunking down this rather large, I guess they called it a doorstop of a book, and saying, you know, this was offered to him as something to consider. And I will let Justin tell you what he felt at that moment. But I remember what I felt, which was, oh, great. This is amazing. Perfect timing. I'm really, really needing something to do right now. And I don't think that's how anybody initially had envisioned it. So I was very good at putting myself out there, I guess.
Yes. And I think you have a Japanese background. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. I'm sorry. I should have also included that the reason why, not just because I had nothing to do, but I am of Japanese heritage. And so I initially thought, what a great thing for me to work on. I'm going to have so much to say. I can't wait to express myself, you know, regarding this particular subject matter. And then very quickly I learned, oh, wait, being Japanese American, of course, is very different than being a Japanese national.
Yes, so I would think so. So, Justin, does this come up for you? I mean, set the scene for me when you hear about this. Is this like a conversation with John Landgraf, who runs FX, or something an agent sent you? Or
it was Gina Balian, Kate Lambert, Lindsay Donahue at FX. When my deal started, they sent this book over, and not under anything other than this is something we've been trying to do. I don't know if this is of any interest. And I think Rachel and I did have interest. We had traveled a lot to Japan together. It was always kind of an interesting subject for me. But I have to be honest, the book was something that we like to say, generationally speaking, was on our parents' nightstands. And it was something that I think its impact was largely known by us, but it was also something that we hadn't directly experienced either in the original novel or the miniseries. So what we knew was the silhouette. And for me, speaking personally, it was a silhouette that I was a little conflicted about. Just the story of a stranger in a strange land, these narratives that persist in large part because a lot of movies, television shows, books, what have you, have been derived from Shogun over the years. And my concern was, there's a representational side of that concern, which maybe I'm not the best person to speak to, but the creative concern I had was that I felt like it was maybe a story that we had already seen before many times. And I felt like me as an audience member, I don't know if I would sign up for it. Fortunately, what happened was we read the book and in going through it, found that James Clavell's novel is actually quite modern and ahead of its time in a lot of ways. I mean, there are many dated aspects that one can point to, but this story, this very intersectional story that was in the novel an ensemble piece, not told from the point of view of just John Blackthorne, but in fact told from the point of view of Torinaga, Mariko, and Blackthorne as three leads in the book. We thought that through subtitling and through what's available to us today technologically, that we could base the story off of the book in a more loyal fashion and tell something that felt like a really intersectional tale of how do we encounter other cultures and how do we encounter ourselves within that.
Well, the miniseries in 1980, which I never saw, but I guess it was very Richard Chamberlain-centric as seeing through the Blackthorne character's eyes, and that's not what we do anymore.
That's our understanding.
Right.
Yeah, and it was also, you know, I think that there was a different attitude towards subtitling, or there was a creative choice made not to subtitle the actors, and I think that we live in a different era where there's not just an expectation, but there's also just an ability and an openness to an international landscape, as streaming has really done that for us today. And so without streaming, I don't know where Shogun might be.
Coming up after the break, Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo talk about how they got FX to back their expensive and heavily subtitled period epic. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to husband and wife writing team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo about the daunting task of adapting the sprawling 1975 historical novel Shogun for television. FX put a lot of faith and money into the limited series, with a massive marketing push including a Super Bowl spot and a choreographed samurai battle staged at Disney's Upfront presentation last year. Marks has more than a decade's worth of screenwriting credits, including Jon Favreau's 2016 Jungle Book and a story credit for Top Gun Maverick. Kondo's background lies in short stories, and in our conversation, she shares her experience of being hired as a screenwriter for the first time. So, Rachel, when you come into this, I mean, you don't have a background in show business. Was there any pushback, or was it clear that you two were going to work as a unit?
I mean, it's a great question because, I mean, I don't know where I got the gall to even think I could be involved in this. You know, I don't have a background in Hollywood and I did not know. I mean, let's be clear, though. I did minor in screenwriting. That was my second major in school. So I knew about screenplays, but I didn't know how to write one.
Right.
So I met with Kate Lambert and Lindsay Donahue over at FX, and they were good enough to read my short stories. And we spoke about the book. We spoke about what mattered to us. We spoke about those moments that maybe weren't as relevant today. We spoke about the female characters. And I think we just all had similar emotional ideas about these characters we wanted to pursue. So they were very, very trusting, and they lent me an extreme amount of faith. And I mean, there are no words. I'm still surprised that they let me in the room. So that was, it was very good of them.
So when you say, Rachel, that you sort of came to this realization that being Japanese American didn't help necessarily with being Japanese, what was that moment like? Or was this a moment where you thought, oh, I'm sort of don't know this after all?
I think that it was a result of just time spent with people who are Japanese, people who were born within that culture and in within that nation and were raised there. And that is their mother tongue. This is how they think. This is how they behave. This is how they dream, you know, and it there are very striking differences. And I think I had just never felt so Western before. You know, for a moment I felt, yikes, this is going to be a very steep learning curve for me, in that you have to actually essentially learn how to zero yourself out and just get out of the way, so that people who know have more room to work and to create their art. And so it wasn't any one specific moment, but I will say that the one saving grace was the one thing that I didn't think would matter. I thought it actually would have been a liability, but the fact that I'm actually biracial, half Asian, half Caucasian, that actually I think worked in my favor, speaking for just myself. But, you know, our writer's room was predominantly Asian American women who are also bicultural and biracial. And it mattered in the sense that when you find yourself belonging to no one culture, you then find yourself inhabiting the space between cultures. And I think that that actually was the thing that lent us whatever insights we needed just to kind of have the courage to get going with the project.
So Justin, when you brought up the idea of bringing Rachel in as a partner, how did FX react to that? Were they like, sure, or can we meet her?
Yeah, I think, well, they met, but I think it was it was kind of a no-brainer upon reading the work and then, you know, letting the pilot that we generated together speak for ourselves. That was the point of no return for FX on this show, and never look back.
You wrote the pilot together. I mean, I've had other couples over the years on the show, and, you know, I always wonder, are you in separate rooms or are you standing there together acting out the characters? How did you guys go about it?
I love talk about this moment.
Why?
If only because, you know, you're with someone for many, many years, married even for many, many years, and you don't know every side of your spouse. And I have always known Justin was a hard worker. He's a talented writer. He has things to say, but I didn't know he was his bar of excellence is so high that I had to kind of re-encounter him as a person and a writer. So,
Justin, what do you have to say for yourself?
I think when it comes to the world of television and film writing compared to maybe fiction writing, there's probably, deadlines drive a
little money on the line.
Yeah, time is money.
Yeah, and so it would be, he would say, we need to work. And mind you, I was, I think, 6 or 7 months pregnant. And so, you know, I had that, shall we say, weight on my... I was going to say shoulders,
yeah,
but
not
I guess
there.
Belly. But it, yeah, not there. And I would say, okay, let's work. That's fine. 15 minutes in, I'd say, it's time for a snack. And he would say, absolutely not. No snacks. Must write.
Must write. Well, time is money, as I think I heard you say. You also got, I mean, I don't know how receptive FX was to the amount of subtitling the Japanese dialogue, because we're dealing with the world and not just a country now. Yeah. So did they feel like, yeah, do it in Japanese, that'll be fine, because we have people in Japan who will watch this?
No, yeah, I'd love to say it was that easy, right? But there was definitely a discussion, and John Landgraf was deeply involved in that discussion, because we knew that we wanted to cast this show unlike any other show that's been told in this world. And to do that, that meant that you couldn't just hire the best actors who happen to also be able to speak English, but you wanted to be able to find the best actors, period, for these parts, to go to Japan with casting and find actors, many of whom had never worked outside of their country before. So to do that, you had to tell it in the Japanese language. And we felt that as an immersion, it would be most effective. So everyone was in agreement about that. I think there were many questions about quantity. There were many questions about how and when we use subtitles and how are we going to do it. And to their credit, they really fell in line very quickly with the idea as we were really starting the prep process, under the promise that we would always be cognizant that the interface of this show when it came to the Japanese characters was going to be written. And so that forced us to look at subtitles through new eyes, and if we were going to do subtitles, to try to do them differently than anyone else had done them, which was the beginning of a very long journey that Rachel and I took that, you know, was kind of couples therapy embodied, because we, gosh, where to begin? You know, we wrote this show in English with our writer's room. It was sent to a team of Japanese translators to put into Japanese. And then working with two of our main Japanese producers, Eriko Miyagawa and our star producer, Hiroyuki Sanada, we started to have conversations that there's more to Japanese dialogue than just translating it into Japanese, that the expectations for Jidaigeki period Japanese are such that things really need to be polished, which of course makes sense, but we had never really seen it through that lens, that there are many right answers. There's not just one right answer for how you translate a phrase from one language to another. And so we took the rough Japanese translation of the dialogue and gave it to a Japanese playwright who spoke no English, Kyoko Moriaki, who specialized in Jidaigeki prose. And then she would work with Hiro-san and Eriko to polish that dialogue, even just on set a few days before we shot it. And then the actors would ask if they could trade out this word for that word instead. And then what we would do at the end of that, after it was performed, one of our Japanese assistant editors would translate the spoken word back into English, like a giant telephone game, and we would use that text for subtitles instead of just using the scripted text. Many times they were the same, because obviously we hope that what we write is what's said on screen. Right. But there were these amazing moments of confluence of two languages and two cultures where this magic came out, and through that alchemy, it gave more life to the words than we could have ever done ourselves. And then Rachel and I would basically fight over those subtitles throughout post-production to move a comma here or a semicolon there in order to make the impact of those words what we wanted them to be.
So now that it's opened and it's very buzzy and people are receiving it very well in Japan and here, I just wonder whether you were thinking, we have really captured something special here, or thinking, what if nobody watches? Let's let Rachel answer that one.
Well, I recall maybe just even a month ago, Justin kind of announced that, you know, this is when reviews start coming in. This is when people begin to actually see this behemoth of a project we've all been working on for so long. And I remember like having, you know, a brief moment of trepidation thinking, how vulnerable. Oh my God, people are going to see it. But then also feeling weirdly confident, not because I knew people would watch it, but simply because I know how much we have all poured into it. All, you know, hundreds upon hundreds of individuals and experts and advisors and the performers. I mean, down to catering, craft services. Everybody poured so much of themselves into this that I kind of had that moment where if somebody does see it and like it, then how gratifying. But I felt so proud of what we had done up until that point that it truly was, you know, gravy at the end if somebody did end up liking it.
I will just say that the support from FX seems to be just extraordinary. I mean, first of all, the budget. I'm sure this is possibly the most expensive show they've ever done.
Yeah.
And they supported with, you know, a Super Bowl commercial and flashy presentation at the upfronts with lots of samurai on the stage.
I don't know how they did it. Everyone, you know, I mean, producing this show was very, very hard. It was a very, like, honest and vulnerable process when you're trying to do a cross-cultural production in the way that through Canada and Japan and the United States, the way it was done. None of that hardship compares to the hardship of actually saying yes to something like this. I don't know how they have slept at night for the last few years. Just knowing the risk, the expenditure, and, you know, the potential downside exposure to something that is as ambitious as this. And, you know, I really have to credit John Landgraf, Gina Bellion, the way they just believed in it. I've never had an easier process, which honestly, I can't believe I'm saying for a subtitled period piece set in another world, that they were always as supportive as they were.
Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo are the creators of Shogun. The limited series airs Tuesday on FX and is streaming on Hulu. Thank you guys for joining, although I would have rather joined you.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
Thank you, Kim.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from Phil Richards and Nick Lamponi, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW shows on kcrw.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.